It was a peaceful farming community. A place where everything had stayed the same for generations. They've always known that someday change would come, but no one expected it to come home with the girl next door.
Little America.
Who the hell is that?
He's weird.
He's like nothing they've ever seen. Nothing they've ever heard.
I don't want to be rude or anything, but Miss Warner, you're giving me a semi.
You distract him, I'm going to hit him over the head with a shovel.
So basically, we're not going to be hanging out?
No.
But after spending a little time together...
So you're just an old hacker disguised as an idiot.
Why don't you, put a little makeup on him?
The Great American Family...
You don't like it, do you?
No, I think I do.
...will never be the same again.
Let's chow down here and munch some grinding!
And he'll turn one small town into one huge party.
Check out the wood that I created for him.
You're okay.
Beautiful day.
Feel the breeze and let it fly. Oh yeah, 747.
The son-in-law.
What do you think their kids are gonna look like?
Hello!
He's a little Jew. Oops.
I feel like a duck-billed platypus.
Ow! Did check out the knots. It's the Leaning Tower of Pisa.
Let's go, Tybalt. Great adventures await.
I think there's somebody who would like.
It's been the hardest working band in business.
Welcome back to Dystopian Dance Party's Year of the Weasel. I'm Zach.
I'm Callie.
And today we're talking about Pauly Shore's second feature film, Son-in-Law. This movie was released July 2nd, 1993. It was another one under the Buena Vista Pictures through their Hollywood Pictures imprint, just like Encino Man. Actually, there's a little bit of drama about this one. I found an article from the Los Angeles Times right when the movie was starting filming. It was September 20th, 1992. I'm just going to read from it at length because it's a pretty juicy story. In the words of one creative artist agency insider, a major war erupted early last month between Hollywood Pictures, New Line Cinema, and CAA over Pauly Shore, the MTV comedian who became a hot property after his starring role in Hollywood's hit comedy Encino Man. The fight was over which film Shore would do next. Totally London, a comedy for New Line that he was eager to do, or The Son-in-Law, a comedy for Disney Studios Hollywood that the comic, according to a New Line source, wasn't as interested in. Ultimately, Hollywood Pictures won. On November 3rd, Shore will start filming The Son-in-Law, a comic spin on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, in which Shore visits his fiance's repressed family. With directors.
That is an interesting point, that it is kind of a play on Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, but it's not racial. It's just Weasel.
Right. Exactly. It's a bold stance against anti-Weasel prejudice. It was the movie that we America needed in 1993. According to sources, Shore's decision came about mainly because of heavy pressure from Disney chairman Jeffrey Katzenberg. Katzenberg and Hollywood Pictures had the contractual muscle to keep Shore from jumping ship until August 1st, the drop dead date, after which Shore was free to cut deals with other producers. Shore's contract, which he signed after being cast in Encino Man, gave Hollywood an option to hire Shore in two more films pending his approval. Disney is known for signing modestly priced actors to multi-picture contracts, thus protecting itself against escalating fees when and if the actor becomes a star. By last May, Shore had become a big fan of Totally London, in which he'd play a male nanny to a brood of British tykes. According to this article, it would have been directed by Dennis Dugan, who directed the movie Problem Child. Have you ever seen that cinematic masterwork?
I don't think so.
Yeah, I think you're slightly too young for it to have been a thing in your childhood. And also, like, I feel like we've established elsewhere, our family are kind of snobs. So I can't imagine mom and dad wanting to see Problem Child. So Problem Child is about this kid. He's this horrible little ginger kid who's been adopted. John Ritter is one of his parents. The dad, obviously, would be the one that John Ritter plays. Gilbert Gottfried is in it. I've seen part of it, and it's very obnoxious. Because it's all, like, the whole thing is, like, this kid is just a little, like, just a piece of shit. Just, like, causes chaos, you know?
Okay, yeah, so I've heard of this.
It's like a staple of child, you know, millennial Gen X child cinema, or I guess more millennial, because it would have been solidly.
Yeah, it came out in 1990, so I would have been too young for it, but it still would have been like older millennial. Right. But even like, when was Baby's Day Out from? Because that, it kind of sounds like that kind of a thing, and I never saw that. However, Andy had it, and we watched it one day, and I'm like, I think this is hilarious, but my parents would not have. There's a reason why I've never seen this before.
Right. I feel like Problem Child is in that category. And honestly, Son-in-Law is probably also in that category. Oh, yeah.
Son-in-Law is absolutely. I mean, that's the reason I didn't see any Pauly Shore movies until I was an adult. I didn't see Son-in-Law until last year.
For some reason, Encino Man got past our parents. And I think mom at least actually liked it, or, you know, thought it was a cute family movie, right?
Son-in-Law is a step too far into weasel territory. it's very Pauly Shore. He's the main focus of this movie to the point where every character becomes a weasel.
Oh my god. Yeah. So, and that's like that's the happy ending, is everybody is now talking like the weasel. Yeah, so anyway, with that kind of pedigree, I'm not sure how confident I am that Totally London would have been a cinematic masterwork. But Pauly Shore certainly seems to have thought so, because you were just saying that he was on the Joe Rogan. Neither of us are Joe Rogan watchers.
Yeah, but, so I've just been, I'll just retell the story. I told it off mic, but basically I also was aware of this drama about Totally London, because I cannot stress this enough that I will just put Pauly Shore videos on in the morning, like when I'm putting makeup on.
And just let them roll.
I basically just have the weasel on shuffle, and it'll just play me anything. It'll play Totally Pauly. It'll play whatever. One of them was a Joe Rogan Experience clip. And usually I'm just not interested in Joe Rogan Experience. Yeah, but right. It was actually kind of an interesting clip. And it was Pauly Shore talking about, like, Pauly Shore currently talking about, I think it was like from 5 years ago or whatever, 5 to 10 years ago. And he was talking about what happened with his career and why he believes that it failed. And it was that the weasel became less popular. And also, he mentioned this Totally London, and from the way he tells it, it sounds like he really wanted to do this film, thought it was going to be a great film, but instead he had to do Son-in-Law and In the Army Now, even though his agent was like telling him not to do In the Army Now. And Jeffrey Katzenberg not only like told him to not do Totally London, obviously because of contractual issues, but kind of like shelved Totally London so can so never be made. it definitely seemed like more of a personal attack the way Pauly tells it. I don't know what is true, but it's just funny to hear it from that point of view, where I'm like, I just was totally believing what the weasel was saying. But I also find it funny that the person responsible for Shrek is also the reason that we don't have Totally London. So I don't know. I feel like I am a little bit siding with Pauly on this.
Yeah.
Just because in my head, I'm still not done being mad at Jeffrey Katzenberg about Shrek 1, 2, 3, and 4.
In a way, I'm sort of glad that I didn't know this background when I watched Son-in-Law, because I feel like I would have been the whole time. I would have been like, okay, this is kind of entertaining, but is this as much of a recipe for laughs as Pauly Shore being the male nanny to a bunch of British kids? And I feel like the answer would probably have been no. So I'm glad that I could just enjoy Son-in-Law on its own merits. And it was, you know, it's a cute movie. I will say, like, if we're ranking the movies so far, Encino Man is still pretty solidly in the first place.
Encino Man exists. Encino Man works as a movie for the most part with or without Pauly Shore. I feel like for my purposes, it's a better movie. Whereas right. Son-in-Law would, it's totally a it's Weasel movie. No one else could be Shore in it.
Vehicle. Right. Yeah. Exactly. I did notice, well, okay, let me talk a little bit about there's a little bit of other background that's interesting before we get into it. Here's an interesting thing. To promote the film, MTV ran a contest to marry Pauly Shore in Las Vegas. The contest attracted 25,000 entrants and was won by Tanya Sinati of Salisbury, Massachusetts, who also won 4 days in Vegas, food, time with Shore, a bumblebee ring, and a yo-yo that lights up. I need to know how old Tanya was because, okay, here. So she was 18. When I read the part about the light up yo-yo, I was like, is this like a 12-year-old girl? Like the bumblebee ring? I guess maybe they made the prizes because they were like, I don't know who's going to win. It could be a woman, it could be a child, but she was 18.
I don't know. For Mary Pauly Shore, it better be a woman. Like, or, well, you know, a person of age.
They never actually signed. There was a ceremony, but they never actually, you know, were legally
I know,
married.
But still, I don't.
So it could have been a 10-year-old. Like, there's nothing technically illegal about that.
I guess, but it just has extreme ick to it.
Here's the article for a little. This is from Entertainment Weekly. She was a nurse's aide who beat out 25,000 entrants to become Pauly's bride.
25,000. Wow. I'm acting like I would not have signed up for this, though. I'm like, 25,000 people?
her rewards, a bumblebee ring, a yo-yo that lights up, 4 days in Vegas, excellent grindage. That's Pauly speak for food. And airtime / with Shore.
Pauly speak.
Yeah. I don't think he'd make a good husband.
What was the excellent grindage? Yeah, I don't think so either.
Yeah,
I mean, I guess we'll get into this, but the whole premise of this movie is, would Pauly Shore make a good husband?
Right.
And it's unclear.
It's inconclusive. Yeah, exactly. I think we know very conclusively that he would make a better husband than Carlo Gugino's boyfriend from back home. But I mean, that is a very low bar because this guy roofies two people in an incredibly Machiavellian plot to get Pauly to break up with his fiance. So, you know, better than that guy, sure. So the movie, once again, not very well reviewed on Rotten Tomatoes. 32% of critics' reviews are positive with an average rating of 4.1 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, while there may be some mild culture clash yucks to be had for those who enjoy Pauly Shore's shtick, this son-in-law is too obnoxious to be worthy of bringing home to your family. The film was a financial success, though. I actually wanted to see real quick because I remember being like pretty impressed by how Encino Man did. So Encino Man was a $7 million budget. It made a little over 40 million. And then Son-in-Law
felt bigger budget too than Encino Man.
Yeah, Son-in-Law, it cost $8 million to make, so slightly bigger. And it grossed in the US and Canada, it grossed $36.4 million. And according to this Wikipedia article, by the end of 1993, it had grossed $4.6 million internationally. That does make sense. I feel like Pauly Shore, you know, the European brain can't comprehend the weasel. This is one of those things that you have to be minimum North American to really get Pauly Shore, I think.
Yeah. Well, maybe if Totally London had come out, he would have broken that market.
I know. That would have been
we'll never know.
It could have been an international phenomenon. Not just middle America, but, you know, the whole world, the whole Western world. there was an interesting review here. I don't think that. So we talked about how Encino Man, Pauly won Worst New Star at the Razzies. I don't think he got a Razzie for Son-in-Law. So I don't know if that's a vote of confidence.
Snubbed by the Razzies.
Yeah. So from the Los Angeles Times, the movie review is titled A Silly Mix of Bad Ideas in Son-in-Law. the reviewer says that the film tries to pretend that it's about tolerance, a kind of Guess Who's Coming to Dinner about anti-LA freak bigotry. He also criticized the film's premise. Son-in-law suggests that somebody like Crawl, that's Paulie's character, probably the weirdest character name in all of cinema. I feel okay making that claim that it's certainly up there. And a recurring joke in the show is that, I mean, we'll get into the plot, but Carlo Gugino's dad keeps calling him crotch or crap or something else that starts with a C-R. And none of them are any weirder than Crawl. So son-in-law suggests that somebody like Crawl would be as weird as a lunar being to the Midwestern Warners. That's the family. That isn't so. Because of TV and the movies, LA subcultures are the ones everyone knows about. In any town within reach of cable TV, the teenagers would not only recognize a Paulie, there might be imitation Paulies at the high school. So that is
that's true. Probably I mean, true. Look at even in Encino Man, like there was a Paulie at whatever Encino High School that was.
I mean, that was still in Southern California, though. It wasn't in South Dakota. But still,
I guess. Yeah, South Dakota. I was thinking like Michigan. Like we talked about this a little bit, and we had like, but I guess it does take. Even with that being on TV, having been from a small town in like the Midwest, like a farm town too, subcultures exist there, but they kind of take a little bit longer to get to us too. So conceivably, it could have been like a few years behind.
Yeah. So the weasel.
Should have waited a year.
In like 1998, like they would be like, oh yes, now we understand the weasel. So that's all the background I've got for, you know, there might be an oral history of son-in-law out there somewhere, but I didn't luck across it like I did with Encino Man. And this is a movie, I think I mentioned this last time. I didn't see this in real time. It's a little surprising, honestly, that I was not. I've been thinking about this a lot because I loved the Ernest movies. And then like a year or so after Son-in-Law came out, like 94, that was like the year that Jim Carrey really blew up. That was Ace Ventura, The Mask, and Dumb and Dumber. And I was huge on all three of those. So there's kind of a conspicuous gap between Jim Varney and Jim Carrey that Paulie Shore would have very comfortably slid into. But just for whatever reason, I missed out on it. My theory about it is, so in 1993, I was eight turning nine. And I think to an 8 or 9 year old, a premise like Encino Man makes sense. It's like, oh yeah, you know, I understand high school. And then like a caveman being unfrozen is pretty sweet. And then like, you know, they wheeze the juice. And like, I feel like that's the 9 year old brain can connect very easily to Encino Man, even though it's about teenagers. And I'm not trying to say that Son-in-Law is like a serious domestic drama that is for adults. However, I think it's maybe a little more, you need to at least have some kind of level of sexual maturity to like really get the stakes of Son-in-Law. You know, it feels a little more teenage than child to me. So I think that might be one reason why it just kind of passed me by.
Yeah, it's kind of weird. I don't really know who the target audience for this is, because other than myself specifically, but it's like there is that whole like domestic drama to it, even though it's a silly, almost slapstick, like there's a lot of like slapstick humor in this. There's a lot of goofy humor. And then you could even take away the plot, because the plot almost just seems like it's just stuck in there to give you a premise for the rest of the movie, which is just a Paulie Shore lookbook. Like it's basically what it is. Like there's so many different outfits in this. I had a field day with my fashion watch. It was like every couple of seconds I was screenshotting or taking a picture of like photographing so I could find a better picture. Cause I watched it on my TV obviously, but there is like so much, and they would do it to where he would be in a new outfit. They would cut the scene, and then he would appear in the scene, and they would like actually give him a moment where he's like showing off the outfit, and then the scene would happen. Like it literally is a Paulie Shore lookbook, and I'm not mad at it.
Costume budget 100% higher than Encino Man. Like he spent most of Encino Man in that same pair of bell bottoms, and then he would maybe like, you know, switch out the bandana, switch out like put on the now I'm in the pink mesh t-shirt or whatever, you know, but in this, it was
some variation of those two pieces.
Right. It was like full this, yeah, blown.
And apparently it's all in that trash bag because that's all he brought to South Dakota or whatever. And he just has like a whole bunch of really, really great vintage pieces in there.
So, okay. The premise of the movie is Carla Gugino. And honestly, this is we haven't been doing minutes to Pauly like we did minutes to Mike. But if we had, this might have the worst minutes to Pauly of any movie that we've watched so far. And that's counting the ones that he was not a star in. Like 18 Again had a fucking incredible minutes to Pauly. He was in the first scene. He wasn't a major part of it, but he was like, oh, there he is. He's already here.
It's not worse than Class Act, though.
No, it's definitely better than Class Act. Yeah. But yeah, nowhere near, like Encino Man, you get your Pauly fix real quick. Son-in-Law, it starts on Carla Gugino, and she plays a character named Rebecca Warner, who grew up on a farm in South Dakota. This is an important aspect of it because, as we all know, because we've all studied the lyrics to Lisa, Lisa, the One I Adore, I think the one key part of the Weasel mythos that Encino Man didn't explore was his passion for farm girls. So, yeah. So they were like, well, okay, we've got the stony crusty dude, but how are we going to work in this part where he's just like a raging horn dog for girls who grew up on the farm? And that's son-in-law is the answer to that question.
It's important. Like, I know we'll get deeper into this, but I'll say that it's important if you are familiar with this mythos. However, it's really only kind of like a novelty for you to be. I mean, I guess like he does go and he works on a farm, but essentially her being a farm girl is not important because she completely drops that within like the first half hour of the movie and just becomes another weasel. Like she has no personality. It's not even that important that she's grew up on a farm or is from this like small farm area.
Yeah, it's only important in so much as it creates a fish out of water situation. Like that.
But
is
it's weird because it starts out of, you think it's going to be a fish out of water for her because it it establishes her life, and then she goes into to college in California, and it's like this wild like party college, and of course Pauly Shore is like an RA there or whatever in the dorms, and it just shows her being unhappy at the school, and so you think it's going to be her adapting to the school, but then they do a complete 180. She just turns into a female weasel. Like her personality does not matter.
All
she
of
has
her development
none.
Happens off screen. Other than those few opening.
But
scenes,
it's like not even development. She just takes having no personality and just becomes the weasel, and then it becomes a fish out of water with Pauly Shore's character Crawl in this farm area. Right. Rebecca could other than as a reason for him to be on the farm and doing what he's doing, she could not exist and the movie would be the same. He could be on the farm for any reason.
Yeah.
She doesn't need to exist as a character.
It's absolutely true. And, you know, I had an idea of what the premise of this movie was. Like, obviously I knew. And I mean, I think everybody does coming into it because, like, the poster of the movie is like this homage to American Gothic where he's standing there with a pitchfork and there's Carla Gugino next to him. And, you know, the movie is called Son-in-Law. So you know that at some point they're going to be engaged. So I was just like, I was kind of trying to do the math in my head while I was watching her whole part. So yeah, it starts with her. She's graduating high school. She's got a boyfriend who, like, you know, the movie kind of signals that he's kind of like, he seems like a very nice, wholesome guy, but he's kind of a creep because he's like pressuring her to have sex. And then, you know, she goes away to college I think it's called the College of Los Angeles or something like that. I guess it's UCLA with the serial numbers filed off. Yeah, she shows up and her family's mortified. Her family, by the way, I should mention. So her dad is played by Lane Smith, who I recognized. I couldn't remember where I'd seen him before, but I knew I'd seen him. He's just like a 90s movie guy. I think the role that I recognized him from, he was like the evil coach in the Mighty Ducks. The mom, I actually did not realize this until just now, and now I'm recognizing her, is also the mom from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. So that's Cindy Pickett.
Oh, okay. She did look familiar.
Yeah. And then, of course, Rebecca's little brother, Zach, is played by Patrick Renna, who is best known as, like, basically, if you needed a husky ginger kid in the early 90s, you'd call Patrick Renna, or you call Patrick Renna's parents because he was a child. So, you know, he's the husky kid from The Sandlot. He's the husky kid from The Big Green, which is kind of like the Mighty Ducks, but for soccer, just like the husky kid of his era. Sure, he loves being remembered that way. And he's a real little shit in this movie. The first time we see him, or one of the first times we see him, when they're in the college, did you notice he's wearing a shirt that says, like, "Please seduce me"?
Yeah, I was gonna point that out, because
conservative South Dakotan parents allow him to wear that.
That's what I was gonna say, is that, like, he's kind of like a weird little pervert. He's not that far from the weasel, so I'm like, y'all are so, like,
yeah,
unaccepting of the weasel, but you're letting your kid just, like, he's literally just, like, digging through her new roommate's bras underwear and drawer. Panties. It's,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
and they're just kind of like,
yeah. And then she walks in, I would be much more upset if I was the roommate, if I was the sister, if I was the parents, like, everybody in this scenario, I would be much more upset by this. But everybody is just kind of like, oh, you kids.
Right.
Yeah.
It's California. Everyone's sure. Chilled out and accepting. So you can just assault people and it's fine. You can just look through their underwear drawer.
Yeah. I guess so.
I do like that they make the roommate a lesbian for no other reason than, I guess, to get this film to pass the Bechdel test.
I did kind of like that. I was a little bit impressed, is maybe too strong a word, but the roommate comes in when the parents are in the room and she's like, oh, hey, you know, I don't remember the roommate's name, but like, I'm whatever. And this is my girlfriend. And everybody's just like, oh, kind of, oh, yeah, yeah. And then they give each other like a really long, passionate kiss, which is like, I feel like even in 2024, when a, like, same-sex kiss is much less remarkable than it was 30 years ago, I feel like you still wouldn't totally make out in front of, like, even if you were,
I feel like, not, you wouldn't same-sex. Do that in a, right. I was like, it's just kind of weird no matter
it's
what.
It's just,
I
mean, weird, period.
It gives the time for them to do reaction shots where everyone's like,
right.
Which, like, I don't think it's handled that poorly, but it basically is like, look, in California, there are lesbians here.
Right. I guess I was just mostly impressed that they weren't, again, impressed is giving it too much credit. I was surprised, mildly surprised that they even went there, because it was 1993. And I feel like same-sex kisses in general were extremely unusual.
And it's Disney, too. I keep forgetting that.
And fact. Disney. Yeah, right. Right. So that did kind of take me aback a little bit. I feel like there is maybe a version of this movie that could have been more, I mean, it sounds like, thinking, even in my head as I think through this, it's a very stupid statement, but I'm going to go ahead and finish my thought, that has more of like a hard-hitting social commentary to it.
I feel like they're striving for that, and it doesn't necessarily work, but
yeah, the way they handle the culture gap is very much like, I mean, for one thing, I feel like Pauly's character is much more, who we still haven't really started talking about yet, but I feel like his character is really much more bigoted and intolerant in some ways. Like, the first thing he says to Rebecca when they meet is, oh, so you're one of those inbred people. When he finds out.
God, I forgot he said that.
And then later, when he actually visits, he sees, like, when they go to the clothing shop, he's like, inbreeders. Like, yeah, he's just straight up
that absolutely accusing got a belly people laugh of inbreeding
to their faces. and so it's like, well, no fucking wonder that they're gonna, like, roofie you and you know, try to run you out of town. But that
could have been a point. Instead, like, obviously, I thought the inbreeders thing was really funny, because he just says it to these two old men on the porch, which is kind of funny, because I don't know, I immediately assume that they're racist, so maybe I'm also bigoted, right. But it's just, like, funny to see people like that and just immediately just say that and not suffer any consequences at all, because they don't even, like, go after him or say anything back. It's like, that's just They just like look at him weird and that's the end of the scene.
Yeah.
But there probably could have been an interesting thing to say about like perceptions on both sides, which I think it was attempting to do, but it just kind of falls
I think they
short.
Ultimately just wanted to make it a fun movie. And I can understand and respect that because you don't really want to be like having to grapple with the fact that, you know, Rebecca's parents are probably racist or at least like homophobic or like they don't talk about Kral's Jewishness at all. But, you know, there aren't a lot of Jews in South Dakota. So maybe that like I think that that could have been that definitely could have been if this was a slightly more serious movie.
But my thing is, it definitely could have they could have made a lighthearted movie, but they already kind of started veering in that direction where it's about being bigoted and having a different perception of people. So they already kind of like had that, but then they also had this other thing where like Pauly Shore just wants to marry this really like hot, they do this a lot at the beginning part, but like keeps saying like he's gonna marry this like hot girl with huge cones or whatever, but then he ends up with Rebecca, who's like a wholesome farm girl, but then she's also basically the weasel now. So it's just like it's just kind of confusing messaging all around, where if they wanted to make just a fun movie, they didn't need to introduce any of that. Like they introduced the lesbian couple, which like, first of all, I think you should be able to have lesbians in a movie for no reason. Like it doesn't have to be a social commentary, but the way they introduce it is like, oh, like these people are intolerant.
It's part of the culture clash. Yeah.
They're shocked. Yeah. Like they're shocked. And then presumably Rebecca gets over it. So that's already a concept and an idea that's introduced. So and it's never really followed through. So if you were going to make a fun movie, just don't introduce any of those. They could have just completely made it to where they're just annoyed and kind of like bewildered by the weasel as a character.
Right. Who is a very annoying person? Like they'd be perfectly within their rights to be annoyed by Pauly Shore. it doesn't need to be any social commentary beyond that.
Or even like the roofie introduction, it's like there are so many other ways
and like the farmhand, you know, their farmhand, whatever his name was, the big guy Theo. That Pauly also always calls fat to his face, which is probably why he participated in this plan. This is like a grown adult with a job participates in this, and almost doesn't face consequences. Like they get kind of roughed up and escorted out of the house.
Yeah,
and
obviously
Theo gets fired. Yeah, but like, how were the cops not called? Like, roofied two teenagers.
Dumped them in a barn.
Spoiler alert for those who haven't seen Son-in-Law.
I mean, if you haven't seen Son-in-Law and you're listening to this podcast, then you...
I think this is a good segue to, or, you know, talking about the weasel being annoying is a good segue to Kral's introduction, which I will say, so minutes to Pauly, not great, but they really make it pay off because when we're introduced, so first we hear the Butthole Surfers song, Who Was In My Room Last Night, blasting through the dorm. So it's like we hear the presence of Kral before we see him.
and see the presence of Kral too, because they do like an entire, like pan the camera around his entire room.
Right. They see his, like, he's a computer whiz, we later discover. So he's got a computer up.
That's another little thing they throw in for no reason. Like, that he's also like a hacker.
Yeah. He sleeps in a hammock. That is his only bed. Is a hammock.
Which is like,
that's how chilly he is.
Presumably the college would have provided him a dorm bed. Why doesn't he sleep?
So I guess he declined it. He was like, no, I need room for my hammock. You can give that to another student. And so the dad is like looking around the room because he's looking for a screwdriver to open Rebecca's trunk.
It's her trunk, her suitcase. Because the little brother forgot it or something.
Right. And the
key.
And he goes into the room and he's looking around and Kral is hanging from the ceiling. like, I guess, is it that does he have those boots that like clip into the, into the
No, because he's wearing bar. those moose slippers, so he's just hanging out.
So he just has incredible lower body strength.
Unless it's like his ankles are clipped and I just missed that. It might be that, but because it would be really hard to hold on with those fuzzy moose slippers.
Right. He has a conversation with him. Upside down.
The first thing he says is hello, which actually gave me a little bit of PTSD because it sounds really, it sounds really similar to the catchphrase from So I Married an Axe Murderer. Yeah,
what is it with us and comedians whose idea of a catchphrase is just yelling hello? So that is just an iconic scene. I really did enjoy that. Crawl, you know, is the weasel again, but just like now, because the movie is slightly more PG-13, I don't actually think it was rated PG-13. I think it might have been PG. I don't know. But because the movie is aged a little bit up from Encino Man, we get to experience like a fuller spectrum of horniness from the weasel. So like we get the cones references, you know, he talks about nugs a lot. At one point, there's a really labored callback to a really labored joke. So like one of his stand-up jokes is it's like playing on the beaver and he's like, look at the wood you created, you know? And in this case, it was look at the wood you created for him because he made Rebecca's mom. He gave Rebecca's mom a makeover.
No, he said, look at the wood I created for him.
I created for him. That's right.
Yeah, there's a lot. Look at the wood you created. It comes up a lot in this.
Yeah, it's apparently one of his iconic lines because it's one of the ones that is at the beginning of Totally Polly. I think that's one of those had to be there kind of moments.
he says it to the mom too, and he starts talking about semis, which is also a weasel thing where he tells people that they're giving him a semi. That happens a couple of times. There's that whole scene where they're mud wrestling. Where are they at the cat house in that scene?
Oh, I don't know.
I know they had mud wrestling at the cat house. It would be really funny if Ricky Rockman was in this movie. He's not, but that would be hilarious.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you were watching Encino Man and you were like, you know, this is good, but I just wish we could see the full spectrum of the weasel's horniness. Son-in-Law will be a better fit for you for sure.
He's definitely less wholesome, but they still try to like put wholesomeness on him in the weirdest way.
Right.
And it's also the like impetus of Rebecca becoming a female weasel.
Yeah. So let's talk about that because that is very strange. So the first time they meet, there are no sparks flying. Like she's kind of put off by him. He sexually harasses her.
He calls her inbred.
And I'm just like, wait a second, because that's what I was saying. Like, I knew that they were going to be engaged at some point. And I was like, in 2 months, these two are going to be engaged? And he's going to go back and visit for Thanksgiving? I was like, how does this work? And then the movie skips ahead. And it's already Halloween.
Which, now that you mention it, is because it skips ahead. First of all, it's like you see them at the orientation or whatever, like the first day where she's moving in, I guess move-in day more so. Right. And her parents leave. And then, the next time we see them is on Halloween. Yeah. And she's still like, she's still not happy. She still like feels out of her element at this school. On Halloween. That's October 31st.
Right.
That's less than a month before Thanksgiving, which is where the rest of this movie takes place. So within
3 weeks, she completely changes. That's just what happens when you let Crawl into your life. Like, you just, you come out a completely different person. Yeah.
Because it's like, it would have made more sense. And it did. First of all, so I guess let's talk about the Halloween scene.
Yeah.
There's people in her dorm room.
Another amazing entrance, right? But let's talk about it. So the people in the dorm room.
There's people in the dorm room. It's a party. Obviously, people are in costume. And she's like, someone breaks her stupid horse, which is like, why did you bring a breakable? I mean, I don't mean to victim blame, but she brings this ceramic, I think, or like some kind of breakable material horse with her.
Yeah.
And then has it in her dorm room, which is like, I don't know. I would just leave that at home, but whatever.
It's for so her to have a visual signifier of home, right? Like, that's all. Yeah. That's the only reason it exists, is symbolic.
Right. And it gets broken.
Like, yeah, by like a fat guy in a dress. It's like, it's the most, it's like the most humiliating way for it to be broken. And he's just like, oh, sorry.
And so then she is upset. She goes out into the hallway. First of all, there's like this recurring joke where like the phone will ring for someone and someone will be like, oh, the phone's for you. And they're like, oh, communal living. And then they go out and answer the phone. It's like, do y'all have to say that every fucking time? Like, we get it. Y'all live in the dorms. It's college. We get it. Which is also funny because it's such like, there's like two things that I notice also with this and some of the Kid and Play movies. Well, specifically Kid and Play 2, because that's the one where he goes to college. But it's like, wow, you really had to like stand in line to like pay your tuition with a check and like and sign up for classes manually. Right. And like you didn't have a cell phone. You went out into the hallway and called your parents or whatever. It's just kind of funny. But so she goes out in the hallway, is trying to call her parents, and Krall stops her. And Krall is in
like
this
full Carmen Miranda.
Yeah,
like
the Carmen Miranda
the big
outfit.
Fruit hat, bra. Yeah, it's like two amazing entrances in one movie.
Oh, well, there's many, many more. Yeah. There's many more where that came from. Like, damn near every scene you see him in, it's a new outfit. And he stops her from calling and is like, yeah, just give me 5 minutes or whatever. And if you still feel like calling them.
Yeah.
And then they go back into her door.
What is Pauly Shore going to say in 5 minutes that's going to convince her to not be homesick anymore? But he pulls it off. He sticks the landing. It's really incredible.
well, he gets all of the partiers out of the room, and then it's really quiet in there, and it's just him and her. And he's in the stupid Carmen Miranda outfit and full makeup. And he like pulls out a picture of him. Is it actually a picture of Pauly?
I was wondering. Yeah, because he looks younger in it, so maybe it was a picture from when he was at, like college age. I'm not sure.
Yeah, but he has glasses, and so it's like he's like, oh, I used to be this geek or whatever. And she's laughing at him, and then he's like, then he says he like grew out the do, got some bruise or something. Grew the dude, guzzled some brew, and then he became, because the like idea is that he's been in school for 6 years,
right?
And he just majored in a whole bunch of stuff, but he hasn't graduated.
Yeah,
I took personal offense at this because I also went to school for 6 years. Pauly got to, this is another thing that was different about going to school in the 90s, I guess, is that you could presumably just keep going to school and changing your major and be fine. Like, he majors in karate. He majors in all this different stuff.
He majors in a lot
of
things that I'm pretty sure are not actually majors. Like, I'm pretty sure you can't major in karate. Maybe UCLA has a great karate program. I don't know. But
yeah,
that was
like,
not
well,
an option.
Like, you're supposed to hear 6 years and be like, oh my God, wow, he's in school for six years. And I'm like, I went to fucking school for 6 years. And all I got was a fine arts degree. And I was taking full-time classes. I was literally, like, I went to community college for 2 years. It wasn't enough credits, even though I was taking classes full-time. And all of my classes transferred. And then I was at Wayne State for 4 years taking full-time classes. There were a few times when they advised me to take a class and then the class was dropped the next semester, so it was fucking useless.
Right.
But other than that, all of my classes transferred and I was in class full-time every semester, even spring and summer, and I still graduated in 6 years. And I just have a painting degree and a minor in art history. I was like, I took offense at the fact that you're supposed to be like, oh my God, he's like a super senior.
Yeah.
Like, I should have just majored in karate.
I know. It pays off. He kicks
the
guy's
ass. Yeah, there is an excellent payoff at the end.
So, yeah, he talks her out because I get at this point she hasn't even been off campus. So then this is when, like, all of a sudden she just goes on a couple of, like, friend dates with Krall. And it's like,
they become like BFFs, basically. Yeah, they're always together.
They go mud wrestling
together.
They go
shopping.
To the beach.
Yeah, they do the mud wrestling thing. They go to the beach. They go clothes shopping. She gets a tattoo.
She gets a tattoo from Flea from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I forgot their Fleas. Yeah, that was funny. And then she's like trying to decide if she wants it. And Pauly is like, well, it's permanent.
Yeah, I get a weird anti-tattoo. I like, does he want to be buried in a Jewish cemetery or something? Why is he so, like, it just seems out of character for the weasel to be like, he draws the line at tattoos, but he contains multitudes. who am I to say what the weasel does and does not endorse? So they actually don't fall in love at this point. I thought that they were going to be engaged when they got home, but it's your classic come home, get in hijinks that cause you to create a fake engagement, and then it becomes a real engagement. It's one of those, yeah. You know.
Basically, she doesn't want to marry. She thinks that her boyfriend is going to propose to her, and she doesn't want to marry him, which is like, you could just say no.
Right.
But she's like, oh, it's complicated. It's like, is it more complicated than making up a fake engagement with this, like, repulsive, obnoxious man? And then, like, faking this until, like, for an entire week during a holiday?
She decides to take him back because we learned this because wearing a pilgrim hat and what he calls Steven Tyler pajamas,
it's like a leprechaun onesie. Print.
Yeah.
That was my favorite scene. And I don't remember. I watched this twice now. The first time I watched it, I weirdly don't remember that.
Yeah.
He's just like, she's on the phone. She's actually on the phone with her boyfriend at the time, isn't she?
I think so.
She's on the phone with him and he's saying, like, I can't wait. And this is where she, like, realize that he's probably going to propose or whatever.
Right.
And then Polly runs out into the hallway and is like, Rebecca, look, Steven Tyler PJs, Steven Tyler PJs.
And then he goes and he's making himself a Hungry Man turkey meal, even though it's not Thanksgiving yet. Like, it's the day of Thanksgiving break, but he's making himself
Presumably it's like a week before Thanksgiving.
Several days pass before the Thanksgiving meal. Like, that happens at the end of the movie. So I don't really know what day it is, but he's already wearing a pilgrim hat and making a turkey meal, a turkey like TV dinner for himself. And he's like reading the box out loud to himself. Oh, And so she decides to bring him home. And when they get off the plane and, you know, she's cut and dyed her hair. She's become the weasel. And when they get off the plane, she's literally like, the first thing she says as she steps off the plane is, ow!
I know, it's so bizarre. She's been fully
weasel pilled.
Because I cannot stress enough how out of character that is. Like, she doesn't really have a character or personality, but it's not that.
No,
like,
she's
at
very
all.
Mild-mannered. She's, yeah, she was like the valedictorian.
And like we said, this was under 3 weeks. It would have even made more sense if she had been at school for that whole semester that she was becoming the weasel.
Right.
It would have made even more sense if she was there for a whole year and she came home for summer.
Right. Yeah. Like, and did it have to be a Thanksgiving movie?
It really didn't, other than making this a Thanksgiving movie, which I'm going to watch yearly from now on.
Yeah,
it doesn't need to be Thanksgiving at all. Like, it could be any time that they have a dinner or whatever. And she could have been at school for that entire year. And it's like over the course of 9 months or whatever, she became the weasel.
Right. That would be more believable than 3 weeks. So yeah, he shows up in South Dakota and, you know, hijinks obviously ensue. I love the scene where he's like, because he brought, like we mentioned, he brought a trash bag full of all of his weasel outfits. And he says to Rebecca that he needs some more rustic clothes because he feels out of place. So, you know, obviously cue the shopping montage at the Western Wear store.
The second shopping montage, because there was another one earlier in California.
That's right.
Yeah.
And he comes and he shows up at dinner. And basically the only thing he's changed, he's still wearing like little cutoff jeans. And a
first of all, the shopping montage involved him putting on chaps nothing underneath.
Oh,
so his bare ass was out,
this?
Which means, it's another time that you can see Polly's bare ass.
We're up to three of shots of Polly's bare ass in this series. We need to like make a counter and have it update.
It's also where you're introduced to the other person who gets roofied. What is her name?
Tiffany Amber Thiessen. Well, I mean, that's the actress. I don't remember.
I don't know what her character's name is, though.
Her character's name was Tracy.
Like Aunt Tracy, okay.
Who is apparently, according to Wikipedia, Rebecca's best friend. I did not get that at all from the movie.
Yeah.
I thought they were classmates.
You never ever meet her. You don't meet her in the beginning of the movie, do you?
Right.
I mean, the first time you introduced
her is
during the shopping montage.
She's there at the graduation, but I don't think she has any lines until they're shopping. And we also later find out that she and Rebecca's boyfriend are having an affair. So, you know, we're just slowly like, they're just making us think, oh, this is a bad guy, which I'm not against. Like, you know, I love anytime that you can, like, there's few things more repulsive to me than like an all-American jock type, you know? So like, I'm already rooting against that guy. So I'm, you know, I don't care. Like, you can pile on as many reasons to make him bad as possible. I'm already on Paulie's side. It does get like, the levels to which he stoops are like, wow, this is actually a sociopath. You know, this is not a right. normal.
Yeah, they go a little bit too far with it. And then there are barely any consequences, but
yeah.
Oh yeah, so when he picks out his rustic outfit and then he shows up at the dinner, which is another big reveal. Like, it's always just right. like he shows up and it's like
yeah, so he's wearing this, like, I don't know, how would you describe the jacket? It's like bedazzled.
It's the jacket that he's been wearing. So he wore that off the plane. So the only difference is that he has a cowboy
hat. Yeah, a cowboy hat and I think cowboy boots. And other than that is his concession to,
I think,
to South Dakota fashion.
I think it might be like patches or like something woven into it. I think it's like a bunch of little patches on the jacket. It's like a denim jacket with patches. He wears it on the plane off of it with some... It looks like brown corduroy bell bottoms. And then he's wearing it at this dinner with tiny shorts. It reminds me of when I bought a cowboy costume for my mom's cat. And it came with a tiny little, like, bandana, but it looked like a little ascot. Like, he's got a little purple, like, bandana ascot and a cowboy hat. It reminds me of that outfit for the cat.
So he makes this huge spectacle because he shows up, you know, looking like that. And I guess that's his way of blending in with the locals, but everybody is like goggling at him. And then the boyfriend, who I guess I should look up his name, Travis. Of course it's Travis. Travis proposes for actually the second time. He proposes to Rebecca earlier, just when they're alone together. And then he didn't take the hint when she kind of like didn't really respond, and he proposes in front of everyone. And so this is something I want to talk about. So she's like, she's saying to Crawl, like, do something. And then, so she like steps on his foot and he jumps up. And then when he stands up, the only thing he can think of to say is that I already proposed to her and she accepted, and now we're engaged. And then she's like mad at him later. And it's like, what did you, I feel like the only thing he could do is this, like, what else would he do that she couldn't do?
And it's also like, why is she giving him all this responsibility? Like, what?
Right,
he doesn't really have fuck all to do about this. Like, he doesn't know this guy. Like,
yeah, this is the first time he's met. Yeah.
They've only been friends for like 3 weeks. They've only known each other for like 3 months.
Right.
Like, he really doesn't have any responsibility to do anything about the situation. It's kind of whack that she invited him seemingly for the sole purpose of making it so that she
basically
doesn't have
being
to
her beard. Like,
can be like avoidant. Like,
and then Travis punches him. It is very fun. Like, I think Paulie taking a punch is very funny. Like, just the way he does it, he like crumples and he's like so hurt. He's like a kid. It'd be like if you punched a child. And he actually starts crying.
I feel like that's a character thing with the weasel too, because there's another, it's during the Lisa Lisa video where like she says something to him and he just goes, ah, like it hurt him. Like, she just says something mean. She's like, you're stupid and you're ugly. And he's like, ow. So I think he just is like very, very sensitive.
Yeah, that got one of the biggest laughs from me was the entire reaction when he gets punched.
Which honestly, one more thing about the punch. It's funny, but it's like, I've never been punched, but like, it probably sucks. I would probably react that
bad.
Way too.
Yeah, it's like his nose is bleeding. It's heavily implied that his nose is broken, because then later she like touches it and he's like, ow, you know, like he really reacts. So yeah, it probably hurt like hell. And honestly, I think one of the reasons why I laughed as much as I did, I haven't really been punched either, and I kind of feel like I would take a punch in a similar way that Paulie does.
It seems realistic than like in most movies where they really like take it or even like just kind of like and fall over.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that was a more realistic response, especially
looks like
from his character.
And then sad, and he like it really like hurts his feelings that the guy punches him. Yeah, so I mean, at this point, there's a lot of, you know, the dad doesn't like him because he's like, what are you going to do to support my daughter? So, and Paulie is like, well, I'll be a farmer because you're a farmer. So then they basically haze him because the farmhand Theo, again, because Paulie like immediately calls him like a fat inbred, basically. So it's like, you know, he's kind of making enemies at every turn. So I have a little bit of sympathy up until the point where they then drug and kidnap him, basically, and make him think that he was sexually active.
Well, and the hazing isn't that bad either. It's just kind of like...
No, it's pretty good-natured.
He lets like a pig out at him, but it's kind of just shit that would happen to you on a farm. They don't really like tell him certain stuff, right? But it's not that bad.
He gets pissed on while milking a cow.
But that's because he's situated behind the cow. It's kind of like, right. You kind of did
that's
that
a user song. Error
I'm not,
thing, I
I'm
think.
Not saying I wouldn't do that because I'm also an idiot, but...
Yeah.
It would be my fault.
But in the midst of all this, you know, like they assume that he's going to give up, but he's actually like, you know, he gets pissed on and like thrown in the mud and all this stuff. But he's still like, well, I just haven't found my groove yet. You know, so he has this like indomitable spirit. And then,
oh, I love that part where they're at the dinner and he says that, and then they're all fighting and he like does his speech where he's like, stop, you're all being so mean to each other. And then he's like, I see what the problem is, and it's me, so I'll just go. And then he gets up to leave, and then he like looks behind and he's like,
and then he goes around to the next door and he does it again, and it's only at that point that someone actually intervenes. Yeah, that part also made me laugh. You're how much you laugh at this is really, it's a function of, I mean, it's a Pauly Shore vehicle, right? So like at this point, if you're going to see Son-in-Law in 1993, you're probably all in on the weasel, or you're a person's parent who's all in on the weasel, you know?
Yeah.
So,
or you're a critic who has to see this movie.
It's their job. Yeah. So like if you're charmed on any extent by Pauly Shore already, I think it'll work for you. You know, it mostly worked for me. I think part of why this movie was charming to me is because we grew up in a kind of a farm community, because he starts slowly bonding with the family. And there's a part where he goes fishing with Rebecca's dad and her grandfather, and they have this sort of like bonding moment, but also he has no idea, like he's holding the reel upside down and stuff like that. And it just reminds me, you know, I'm not from LA. I grew up in a community like that, but I do not know how to do any of that like manly man stuff. So I remember one time in Missouri going to a shooting range, and I used a rifle with a sight, and the recoil, the kickback, I was an idiot and I didn't take my eye out of the sight before I pulled the trigger, and the recoil set the sight like back into
my head.
So I had like a mark on my head. So like watching Pauly Shore try to do these farm rural activities was very relatable to me, even though I'm not from the big city, because I'm just not a nature boy, you know?
Honestly, seeing Pauly Shore try and fail at doing most things is relatable to me. Like, when they're just kind of like all rolling their eyes. Cause I feel like when you're just kind of like goofy and distractible and don't necessarily know how things work, people do automatically get like really annoyed at you. And I'm just like, I'm very Lucille Ball about things.
But if you're going to be an idiot, isn't it nice to be like a cute, lovable idiot? It's like, oh, okay. You know, I can be an idiot, but I can still be charming, you know?
Yeah. Well, I talked about this on my other podcast too, where like I went to my therapist and I said that I try to channel David Lee Roth a little bit when I'm like in social situations, so I can just feel like I'm not being annoying and like just be more like confident about myself.
Right. Because if there's one thing David Lee Roth is not thinking about, it's am I being annoying?
How
right
fucking
now?
Boring right. and pointless this story is, and how
like that just never enters his mind.
But that has definitely transferred a little bit over to how like the weasel reacts to stuff, because I'm 32. I'm not going to stop not knowing how to do stuff and not understanding how things work. So just kind of being more okay with doing stupid stuff and just being like, oh, I don't know, I'll do it. I'll just get my groove. Like,
yeah,
I just haven't gotten into my groove yet.
And he is also very competent in other, like we find out he's a computer hacker, and that's how he earns the trust of Zach, the younger brother.
The only reason that he's a computer hacker, it's never mentioned before or after.
Right. Well, they have a flimsy explanation because he says that he grew up in Las Vegas and he was just like had a lot of time to himself in the casinos. Because again, every Weasel character, it comes from a broken home. So his whole backstory is, you know, like his mom's been married a bunch of times and stuff like that. But instead of Los Angeles, it's Las Vegas. Instead of a comedy club, it's a casino. And he spent a lot of time. So I don't know. Is Pauly Shore a computer genius? He's very good at social media.
I have no idea.
I don't know if that's a different skill than being able to like get on the command line.
I mean, yeah. What the fuck does he even do on that computer? What is that interface even? We had a computer probably not as early as 93, but we had a computer in the 90s. I don't remember them ever looking like that.
Yeah. And it's some kind of antivirus program that for some reason needs a really complicated, like keystroke sequence to activate. Right. I feel like an antivirus, even in the DOS days, was a little more user-friendly than that, but anyway, it wins Zach's trust and makes Zach a little bit less of an absolute.
Terror, because we didn't mention this, but he has to room with Zach.
So. Yeah, and Zach is like, I don't remember what he says, but he says basically that you're actually like a really great hacker and you just seem like a complete idiot. And what I love is that he's not even mad. He's just like, yeah, yes, that's exactly it.
I like the parts before that happened when Carl is trying to win him over and he just like makes this two enormous sandwiches and comes in with them. And then when Carl says something mean to him and he offers him the sandwich and then Carl says something mean to him, he's like, all right, I'll take this back then. And then he just has these two big sandwiches.
Oh yeah. Okay. There's one other thing to mention. The grandpa and the fishing scene falls and has a heart attack and Carl, this is another one of his majors. He majored in CPR. Not a major. generously.
There's not a full semester's worth that you can. I've learned CPR because I briefly did like after school programs and they had you get CPR trained like years ago. It's really just like it's like an afternoon and then you watch some videos. That's pretty much it.
I think generously we can say maybe he was studying to be an EMT, but I also don't think that's something you would do at UCLA. I think that's a different institution entirely.
Well, he specifically says that he majored in CPR.
CPR, yeah. So I don't know what's going on at this school, but he does know CPR. And because he's an expert of CPR, he decides that this man having a heart attack, that should be how he intervenes. And of course, the grandfather awakens as he's coming in to like seemingly kiss him. But weirdly, I feel like that's like a turning point in their relationship too, because the grandpa was very
nice. And the dad. Yeah. I guess previous to this, he did have like a kind of another heart-to-heart moment where just like uncharacteristically Crawl just has this like great insight on how family dynamics and emotions.
He should honestly be a therapist or something. Like that's what he really like. Because he finds a way into all of these people's hearts.
Yeah, like that is the plot. He's like, oh, because I guess the dad and the grandpa are going at each other and he's like, it's kind of like how you treat your son or whatever, and the dad kind of like thinks about it or whatever, and then the whole fiasco with the CPR happens. So it's like after this fishing trip, even though he's done basically nothing, he's thrown a fishing rod into the water by accident basically, and then like even if he had done CPR, it would have like probably killed this old man.
I'm pretty sure that's not an intervention for a heart attack.
You have to like press hard on the chest.
I mean, I didn't major in CPR, so I don't know, but
yeah. But somehow it's like a positive thing.
And so this is the point where they're going to. So we know that Travis is up to something because he offers to throw a bachelor party. And then he goes to Tracy and is like, I need you to do me a favor. And so she's like seemingly in on something. Right. So we know something's going to go down. And then they're having this. They're having the bachelor party. It's at the local bar. Paulie, he gives him the roofie in a beer. has him chug the beer, and then Pauly gets up and does karaoke to the song "Thank God I'm a Country Boy." Because in a previous scene, that was playing on the radio when he was driving a combine of some kind of farm equipment. He was driving it and playing "Thank God I'm a Country Boy."
Because it was the tape that was in there. So he was like John Denver and he puts the tape in, whatever.
Right.
And it's very loud and he's driving it through the fields, ruining these cornfields. And
And somehow he writes his name. Yeah, which is like really amazing, actually, because it doesn't seem to be premeditated at all. But a crop duster flies by and sees that he's signed the word "crawl."
Yeah.
So he's singing "Thank God I'm a Country Boy," and then he starts like passing out. And Tracy, apparently the favor that he asked is that she would strip at this bachelor party.
Which is a wild out. That's a wild thing to even if without
it's
the
a
whole
wild thing to
fiasco.
Ask and then to agree to. You know, it's fucking insane. Yeah. Like what kind of power does Travis have over her? Even it's if they are sleeping together, like imagine the full context of it too. I need you to strip at this guy's bachelor party because I'm trying to break him and my ex up so that I can get back with my ex. Like, what the fuck? Like,
does she know that full context? I wasn't sure about that because I think she thinks they're in a real, well, no.
I feel like
she
knows.
Think they're in a relationship because they're engaged.
Right. I feel like she knows. Yeah.
And it's also like she's Rebecca's best friend. The whole thing is kind of fucked.
And I think the real problem is just that all of these characters are just two-dimensional backdrop for the weasel, right? Like, no, the only person with any kind of character development is Crawl.
Yeah, I mean, kind of, but
kind of.
Not really character development. There just is a character there.
I don't think that she knows that she's then going to be roofied, and then they like arrange them in a compromising position in the barn so that the next morning they're discovered by the family and everybody thinks that they slept together. And what's really wild is that it seems like it's going to work. Like Travis shows up and proposes again. And Rebecca seems like she's about to say yes.
Well, it's also wild because in a previous scene, they, after the fishing trip, after they had this bonding moment, Crawl and the dad and the grandfather, Crawl is like, we need to talk. And he and Rebecca go and talk. And he's like, I'm going to tell them because I can't keep this lie up. Like, we just bonded and I feel wrong lying to your family. And she's like, just keep it up for another week. And he's like, either I'm going to tell them or you're going to tell them. She doesn't tell them.
Right.
And then, so like, presumably she wants to keep this up until they go back to school. And then she can break the engagement and then not have to have had any kind of like discussion with anyone about this, including the person who keeps proposing to her or her family. And so like, she's very committed to this whole thing. And then she sees Crawl and Tracy in the barn and she immediately comes in. She doesn't need to say anything. Like if she really wanted to keep this up and it's not a real engagement to her, she could just stay quiet about the whole thing. It's like, oh, Crawl was drunk. And then Tracy could leave and then continue on. But she walks into the house and is immediately like, the wedding is off.
Yeah, I guess we're supposed to assume that she has feelings for him at this point. And, they became best friends in 3 weeks. So maybe they could also fall in love in like 3 days.
Well, I think you're supposed to have believed that. I think that there's like hints that they had fallen in love like when they were doing stuff together. And she's just kind of being chill about it and whatever. Because he keeps saying that he's going to marry like a girl with big cones or whatever. So I think it's like a thread that doesn't really ever get dealt with.
He merely settles for a young Carla Gugino, like, you know, who amongst us?
Right. Like, I think you're supposed to be like, oh, well, he actually wants this like other kind of girl. It's like, it's not really a fully fledged idea. So I think that thread has already been planted, but also it's like we just established that she wants to keep this going.
Yeah. The genre conventions of romantic comedy are doing a lot of heavy lifting for this movie because you just like, you know, they're going to end up together. So you're like, okay, well, you fill in the blanks. But Tracy and Crawl show up and Tracy reveals that she was also drugged and that Theo for some reason was in on it.
Yeah, well, she finds the drugs in the car and then also The other thing was that, like, she got in the car and she had to adjust the seat because, like, I guess Theo was driving the car. Because
there's a fat guy driving it, yeah.
Yeah, a fat, well, he's also tall, but yes. Right.
So this is where they get, like, ejected from the house. I don't know why the police are not called. This is
this is where Pauly Shore, illegal. he does karate.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh,
where was this energy when Travis hit him? I guess because
that's a good point. I didn't even think of that.
I guess because he's a true pacifist and he's like, well, Travis didn't do anything to me, you know, but now, like, now that it's in self-defense.
Yeah. Although I think getting punched in the face is also self-defense.
Yeah.
More so than just like he's already getting escorted out and then you choose to.
That is actually true. And then the movie ends very abruptly. So she's going to end.
And they invite Tracy to, so the family invites Crawl back to dinner.
Right.
Because it's Thanksgiving. Like, the bachelor party took place the night before Thanksgiving. So now it's Thanksgiving, so they invite Crawl, and then they're like, oh, Tracy. Which is like, they were going to invite Travis, too. So I'm like, don't any of these people have their own family? Because that's another thing. Travis is always just kind of lurking around the house. I'm like, doesn't this guy have a house? But I think it's also wild to invite Tracy, because obviously she was a victim in this situation, but she was also, like, banging her presumably best friends,
right?
Like almost fiance, like her boyfriend, however many years, and then was like in on the whole like stripping thing.
It is a little weird how quickly she didn't deserve that to be roofied, but and this is also the scene where we, you know, the family has now been fully weasel pilled. Everybody is talking like the weasel. I don't remember the exact line that the grandpa says, but I'll drop it in there, and it's very funny.
So I didn't bone her.
So he didn't bone me. So you guys didn't bone.
Oh, now, wait a minute. You can't really believe
me. You wait a minute. I gotta tell you, Travis, it really tweaks my melon to see a buff bro like Crawl here get wheezed on by a greasy scumbag like you. So you just chill.
And yeah, so at this point, Rebecca's going to, she stands up to, like, say this was actually fake. And then Crawl interrupts her and he's like, we weren't sure about the date. You know, we might want to wait a little bit longer. So they're still going to get married. And then it's just like roll credits.
Right. It's still unclear if they're even like together, which I guess is fair because it's like, should they be getting married?
Yeah. I don't know.
They've only known each
maybe
other
there
for
needs
three.
To be a son-in-law too.
Yeah, maybe.
To answer all these questions.
Well, Paulie was saying that he misses starring in movies, and it's like, I would watch Son-in-Law too.
I would too. Yeah, I think Carla Gugino is still acting, you know? Yeah, so I mean, you know, like I said, this movie is not going to win a new convert to Paulie Shore. But like the family in this movie, the Warners, like them, I have been weasel-pilled. So I was like, yes, this is great. I will also say, I think this movie hits very different in 2024 than I think it did in 1993, because you know the Warners all voted for Trump. You know that, like, at least the grandpa is probably on QAnon Facebook groups. You know, like, there was something kind of quaint about the idea that, like, the differences between middle America and the coast could be so easily overcome by just one scrappy
also
guy
by
cutoffs.
just everyone becoming the weasel. Like, there's not really any compromise here.
Right. No, like, no.
Other than he has to do farm work, I guess. But like,
right. And maybe that's the real message. Maybe that's our way out of this, you know, political gridlock that we're in. We need to weaselify this country to get us out of this red state, blue state thing, you know, and just become one big purple bandana country, right?
Like, yeah.
So it's a message perfect for our times.
Yeah. Because, yeah, he doesn't have to compromise any of his morals or anything, really, other than he has to learn how to milk a cow. But that's similar.
Yeah, he has to marry a woman with slightly smaller cones. That's really the only compromise.
Like I said before, I mean, this movie is not great plot-wise, but it is an excellent Pauly Shore lookbook. Every scene, you're treated to a feast for the eyes. That's a different Pauly Shore outfit. So this is very good for my I need to come up with a better term, but right now it's just my weasel fashion watch.
You better work.
First things first, wardrobe.
There's a lot to look at. So the kimono robe that he's introduced in, it's like a red, like, kimono-style robe that he puts on after he's been hanging upside down. He still has the moose slippers on, and he has just, like, boxer briefs, I think. And I think he has, like, does he have a camera around his neck or something? I think, he has a camera on his neck because he's, like, that's another thing is that he, like, videotapes. And so he wears that. When he's first talking to Rebecca, he comes with a screwdriver because the dad had originally come into his room for a screwdriver to open the trunk, and he later comes in with the screwdriver and opens her trunk for her. And then later, the kimono robe makes a comeback where Rebecca is wearing it. So right. I always like, in these Pauly Shore movies, there's like a lot of like throwbacks to the outfits.
Yeah.
like there's a lot of outfit changes, but then you see them again. Like you see the pink mesh shirt again in Encino Man. You see the pink bell bottoms again.
Yeah.
Then there's the Carmen Miranda costume, of course, that we talked about. It's pretty good. He actually looks pretty good with makeup on.
Yeah.
And this is a good chance for us to connect this with 12 Months of Mike, because in 12 Months of Mike, we had Cat in the Hat, where he had the Carmen Miranda outfit. And I just want to do a Who Wore It Best.
I mean, I feel like it's obviously going to be Pauly, right? You know, like there's no.
You don't think that Mike Myers in costume as a giant cat in costume as the Carmen Miranda costume was.
I mean, conceptually, it's a real mind fuck. So, you know, I have to give it points for that.
I think that Pauly looks. I agree. I think Pauly wins. Cat in the Hat does have these gloves that are like. Or maybe it's just his hands, but they look like gloves. Maybe that's what it is. But I think it might be his paws, and he presumably has like long nails on them. But it looks like these white gloves with the red nails, which are really cool. I think that was like a costume that they had in the 30s too, where it was just like gloves with long nails on them. So like, but now that I'm looking at it again, I think it is just a stupid fucking white hands. but also the cat in my hat. I watched the scene again, and he keeps making these horrible faces where he's like. So I'm going to give it to Pauly, but our listeners can feel free to weigh in on.
Yeah,
for sure. We'll post on our Instagram, dystopiangram, the two pictures side by side.
Smash or trash.
Smash or trash. For me, it's definitely trash the Cat in the Hat for any reason, on any occasion. During the fashion montage, I'm looking at my screenshots here. He's wearing this outfit. Oh, yeah. It's like these purple and green paisley pants with a leather or pleather vest with no shirt underneath.
That was a good one.
And then the green scarf. And then right after that, you see him in. This is when they go and get the tattoo, I think, and he's wearing another little vest with nothing underneath, like an elastic headband on his upper arm, like a red headband here that I think he later wears in his hair. So there's a lot of outfit callbacks, and he's wearing these tiny cutoff shorts with a zebra print fabric. They're like ripped up, and there's a zebra print fabric that's been sewn into them. So he has like that in the pockets, and then also like. The like package area, he has like zebra print, and I think there's some on the back too. And then at the next scene you see him in, I think, is the Steven Tyler PJs, which is great because it's again
the
big pilgrim hat, which again it's like, why for a holiday that he doesn't even go home for, why is he so excited about
he's really amped? Yeah.
And then these PJs look great too. They're like a really nice looking soft leopard print. I want a pair of these now.
So you can chant whenever you're wearing them, Steven Tyler PJs.
And I would. Like, he also, when he gets off the plane, he wears this outfit for a lot longer when he's in the farm. Yeah. With some variation.
Well, he could only bring so many outfits, right?
Like, right. So he has just like a green, like, I think it's like a button-down shirt, and then the brown bell-bottoms, and then a headband, that is a, it's like a gray scarf that it's a headband, but then it like goes, the scarf part goes down his back. So that was a nice touch. It's not just around his head. It actually like flows down like hair. So he has that on. And then the jean jacket that we talked about with all the patches, it's like all these different color patches on the front. And then he obviously reappropriates that for the dinner where he's in the tiny shorts and the cowboy hat and the purple bandana. And then when he's working on the farm, he has that same denim with the patches, but it's overalls now. So he's wearing those overalls and then like a cutoff tie-dye sweatshirt with no sleeves. And then he has a pink shirt on underneath that and the cowboy hat. That was a good look. And then when he comes in after he does the makeover for the mom, which, by the way, we didn't talk about this. It's really fucking weird. It starts so strange because he sees her and she's washing her hair. And so he thinks she's Rebecca. So he sneaks up on her or whatever.
Who he's not in a relationship with anyway, you know.
Right. So he sneaks up on her. It's the mom. And she's like,
he kind of like nuzzles her back. She's in a
towel.
He does something very intimate, you know.
And she's in a towel, but she's still, like, basically new. And then she turns around and asks him to leave. And he's like, oh, I thought you were Rebecca. And then he tells her that she's giving him a semi. And, like, then he, like, tells her, like, oh, you're really attractive. Basically, it becomes, like, a tender moment. And I'm like, wait a minute.
And she doesn't, rather than calling the cops on him, because he does the give me 5 minutes again. You know, he's like, just give me 5 minutes and, like, give you a makeover, basically. And if you don't like it, you can go right back to normal. And she's like, okay. Like,
Well, first she says no, and then she like opens the door again. And
is this the power of the weasel? Like, I don't know. I've never been sexually harassed by Pauly Shore before. So maybe this is actually what it's like. And you're just like, you know what? Because I do notice, I will say, like, on Totally Pauly, and even on his show now, what I've seen, he kind of gets away with a lot. He's always kind of dancing on the edge of being inappropriate, you know, but like he somehow gets away with it, right? Yeah. He's like, he
wants to glaze your donut, which is like he wants to come on you, which is a really full-on thing to say.
right but like something about it, maybe it's because he's little and there's kind of like a sweetness to him. It's like what Miles Davis said about Prince. You know, he said that the stuff Prince would say, if Miles Davis said it, he would get arrested. But because it's Prince and he's a little guy with this, like, this little high voice, everybody's just like, oh, he's so cute. You know?
I think that's definitely doing a lot of the heavy lifting with it, because little guys are definitely treated differently, like, for sure.
And that's also, that reminds me of the scene where he gets manhandled by that big mud wrestler, and she just like throws him around like a sack of potatoes.
Well, and I think that's part of it too, specifically for Pauly, is that like he's little and he says really out of pocket things, but I feel like he could definitely have his ass kicked by any of the people that he's saying this to. So it kind of like takes some of the like danger away, because a lot
he
of
could being, and frequently does. Like we've talked about this, he gets thrown in a lot of dumpsters and like mud.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Cause it's like a lot of, honestly, the thing with being sexually harassed or like catcalled or any of that stuff, it's like a fear of physical harm. It's not so much like, oh, I'm offended that you said something gross to me. That can sometimes be the case, but it's more so like you're saying this to me and it's scary because you're bigger, like scarier. Like that's the problem with being catcalled. It's not like the compliment or whatever. It's that like, if you're saying this to me, you could do something else to me. Whereas I don't feel that way about Pauly Shore. Like, I definitely feel like Pauly Shore, so that he could glaze my donut, I could beat his ass. And I feel like he would admit to that. Like, I feel like he'd be okay with that assessment based on
everything I've seen of him. Okay, is there anything else we have to say about Son-in-Law? I know we kind of got it off on a tangent there, but I feel like that's irrelevant. That's something that I've been wanting to say for a while, because watching Totally Pauly and watching his other stuff, I'm just like, man, he gets away with a lot, you know?
Definitely. Admittedly. Even with me as like someone, I'm very low tolerant of people who say stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh, I love Pauly Shore. I never finished my fashion watch, so there's one final outfit that I promise. But it might be the best one. It's the blue pinstripe bell bottoms with the cowboy boots that have like a red toe to them, and then a purple shirt, the same, I think it's the same gray headband and the vest that's like a long, like flowy, kind of like hippie looking vest with a bunch of different patterns, and it's like red and orange and stuff. And he wears that when he introduces the mom's makeover at the dance. And that's, and this is another part where it's like, you're supposed to be excited about what the mom looks like, but the first person who comes out is Polly. And then he just does like this. Like, I don't even remember what the mom was wearing. It's just right. Like
makeup basically. Like, yeah, and like, you know, like a shorter skirt.
He taught her how to use makeup, which presumably he knows how to do because he did that Carmen Miranda. Because
he did that great Carmen Miranda outfit.
Favorite outfit from that was probably, honestly, like the final outfit, or the final one I talked about where he's got the blue pinstripe bell bottoms. That was probably the most impact, but my favorite personally, the one that was most memorable for me, was I think the little vest and the tiny shorts with the zebra print.
Yeah.
Or Steven Tyler PJs. It's a toss up.
Well, it's two different, very different moods, right?
Like, yeah.
You know, Steven Tyler PJs, that's a more wearable. You can see that for yourself as loungewear, you know?
Yeah. Well, I could see myself wearing either of them, but I feel like it's like you could wear both of them in the same day. You just come home and put your PJs on.
And that's what Crawl does, right? Like, yeah. All right, so next time we're going to talk about, maybe we'll talk about some Totally Polly episodes, some other stuff from like 92, 93, just to kind of like fill in this peak Weasel moment, because it's all downhill from here for the old Weasel, like Kelly alluded to.
Admittedly, like self-admittedly.
Yeah, you know, the next movie we're going to talk about is In the Army Now, and I mean, Totally Polly's still on the air at this point, but the magic is going to start to die a little bit. So let's spend one more episode in the full bloom of Polymania. Then we'll start getting into the decline.
which I'm actually very excited about.
Yeah.
Because I cannot wait to watch Biodome again.
Yeah. I can't wait to watch In the Army Now. Like, the idea of Pauly Shore and Andy Dick on screen together.
I keep forgetting there's Andy Dick.
It's like weapons grade obnoxiousness, you know. I just like, I cannot wait. So in the meantime, if you want to get a hold of us, we're on YouTube at Dystopian Dance Party, we're on Instagram at Dystopian Graham. You can email us at heybuddy@dystopiandanceparty.com. You can visit our website, which is what I just said, dystopiandanceparty.com. And please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, give it a review if you're so inclined. We're on all of the major providers at this point, other than like Amazon. But we're on Spotify, we're on Apple, we're on Google. Any of those, you're good. And we're on YouTube, and you can see us. I don't know if that's a pro or a con. I enjoy the video content. I can't say
I enjoy the video content. However, I was watching the first one we did where I did the intro, and I have to read them because I'm like Ron Burgundy, and I have to actually like type out every single thing, including like pronunciation, so that I don't fuck it up. And so the video's on me and I'm just like staring, like I need to have like a prompter in front of me or something. Yeah. And then I have this stupid glare on my glasses, so I'm just like,
yeah. I definitely don't love being on camera, but the pros outweigh the cons. So if you're not on any of the major podcast providers, try it on YouTube, because we give you something to watch too. And we, you know, we don't like being on camera, so we put a lot of other shit on top of us as much as
a lot of clips. If you want to see the Polly looks.
Exactly.
I'm making a lot of work for you this time, because you have to go through.
I know. I'm going to basically have to rip the whole movie, but that's fine. We got time. So we'll see you in a couple weeks. Bye.